Hi, everybody. I'm Lacey.
I'm Bailey.
And I'm Drew.
And we're sarcastic, so let's get sinister.
How were your days today?
Good. The Eagles won.
Go birds.
Go birds.
Go birds. Go
went
birds.
To a Halloween parade today. Got a little bit of October sunburn, so.
Oh, now that you mention it.
Yeah, this isn't my normal just like red that I tend to walk around with. This is specifically from the sun.
Lovely. I went to a pumpkin patch yesterday.
Oh, we didn't get any pictures.
Do you want pictures? I think Bailey got pictures.
Oh, did you get pictures?
Sorry, I have a whole, there's a big family group chat. Ooh,
that's fair.
Sorry. I'll send you some pictures, Lacey.
Why isn't Lacey in that group chat?
Well, because like if Lacey was in, then we would have to add Becca. And then if we'd have to add, I don't know, Adam's friends, Caden's friends.
Well, so here's the thing.
Mom loves me.
I think Lacey's more, I love Becca, but I think Lacey's more a part of the family.
Oh. If you want to gatekeep your family group chat, that's fine.
I'll just send you all the photos. Just calm down.
You would just see a lot of baby pictures.
Okay.
Yeah. And sometimes it does teeter into like weird chat. I don't know.
Dad tries to make jokes regarding stuff.
Yeah. But so we went to the pumpkin patch yesterday and we picked pumpkins. And then today we painted them.
Ooh.
And I don't know, you guys probably remember up in like last 3 years that we've done this, it always ends with the children painting themselves.
Mm.
This year, the oldest did not.
Oh.
Yeah. I was like, oh my God, is she that age?
She's getting so old.
I know.
Well, she's
matured.
Like four or something.
Yeah. The two-year-old painted her hands.
Sure.
Yeah.
Which, so when we first started off, she got, like, she kept saying, like, every time she got paint on her hand. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, we're just not going to deal with paint today. But then she started using her hands to paint, and she
probably the initial, like, she wanted to be neat, and then she was like, at a certain point, she was like, you know what, fuck it.
Yeah, she's like, you know what, this is actually fun.
Yeah, it's fun being messy.
Yeah.
I watched the Eagles. I'm currently dog sitting, and I was too lazy to go to a gender reveal, but they live streamed it, so now I have the sex of my friend's baby.
That's friendly of them.
I can't say it. They don't want anything posted on social media.
Okay, but we don't know who the friend is, so. How'd they do it? Can you tell us how they did it?
Yes,
they did one of the stupid, little
poppers?
Yeah.
Oh.
With, smoke or whatever.
I saw there was somebody posted something on Facebook.
They're not stupid. Yeah. It's cool.
Somebody posted a gender reveal on Facebook. I didn't bother watching it because they're a Facebook friend, but, like.
Also, you could just skip to the end.
Yeah, it's sometimes the video just starts and there's a whole, it's like a 10 minute video, but the first 9 minutes are just staring at the truck.
Or it's like people laughing or making jokes and you're like, okay, go yeah. There, so I don't care.
But they did the truck thing with smoke.
Yeah.
I assume because I spent the first 2 minutes watching the truck.
Oh. That's fun. I like watching videos of gender reveals gone wrong.
That makes
for a variety
sad.
Of reason. Whether it's the physical, the popper things don't pop or something, or somebody in attendance acts out of place. I always enjoy it.
No, it's a friend. It's not a family member.
Okay.
I did. Oh, last week, so that's my one sister-in-law. My other sister-in-law is also pregnant. I missed their gender reveal because I was at work.
That's fair.
Yeah.
You'll find out.
But when Pat and I are ready to have children, we are still in the running to have the first girl on his side of the family.
Oh, they're just popping out boys.
Popping out boys.
With yeah.
My competitive self, I'm like, okay, let's go. We're going to set all the environment correctly.
Yeah, I would like to say that I'm also competitive. I did think it was a win when I had the first grandkid and the first grandson.
Yeah, I was annoyed by you having the first grandson, but I was like, you know.
And granddaughter, to be fair.
Yeah, but I wasn't ready to have kids at that point when you were the first time, so who cares?
I do forget that Bailey's younger than us.
Yeah, by a healthy chunk.
Yeah, not like a year. Like, you're a year younger than I am, but I feel like she's, like, a year behind me, and she's not. It's a...
No, she's 5 years younger than you, Lacey.
Yeah, I forget.
No, I know.
Oh, Bailey, you're so mature.
You're like a whole grown-up.
Like a grown-up.
Should we get started?
Oh, sure. Yeah, I forgot what we were doing.
We're just
chatting. I mean, we could just spend the whole time playing. We play some weird games.
Remember that number game?
Oh, we should play that again.
That was fun.
I also, like, I get, like, TikToks where the podcast people play fun games together. There's the one where they had, like, 10 cups of weird liquids, and then the straws were super long and all braided together, and they just had to pick a straw and suck it.
I like the ones where they have to differentiate between, like, Coke and Pepsi and, like, Coke Zero and everything. I think I'd be really good at that, but, like, the root beer version.
I could identify Dr. Pepper like a son of a bitch.
That's because nothing else tastes like Dr. Pepper.
And I'm also very good.
You know what we tried yesterday? That was good. I didn't know that they made it. 7-Up has a Shirley Temple flavor. Yummy.
So...
Oh, Bailey has a whole story. A few
weeks ago, I was having, like, a Halloween themed night with Becca.
Mm-hmm.
And we were, like, painting, like, we painted artificial pumpkins, so, like, they last longer. And we were doing Halloween, like, drinks. So I had to get, like, a bunch of, like, mixers and stuff. So I have grenadine. And because I've had Sprite, too, I've been making Shirley Temples.
That's right. Shirley Temples are always a win.
Mm-hmm. All right. I think we're going to get into the episode.
I didn't like the lighting behind me, so I had to turn it off.
This also feels very aggressive.
Well, it's just like one light was like shining over my shoulder. I didn't care for it. Alrighty.
Mine's too dark now. I'll fix it.
There's a dog that needs to shut up.
I don't hear them. Never mind.
There it is.
As soon as I said it, I was like, oh, in the distance.
Okay. So.
Oh, she's cute.
What we've decided to do for this episode is to do like a couple spooky type stories. Mine is like a roller coaster.
Oh, good.
Okay. So, strap in. I'm gonna tell you about Kaisha Whippert. Sorry.
She's got a lot of vowels.
Yes. So, let's get, I'm organizing my desktop.
Physical.
Oh, I was like, what are you talking about? Okay.
I've been binging The Office a lot.
On the 1st of August, 2010, 27-year-old Christy Abrahams frantically called the police to report her 6-year-old daughter was missing. Christy said that she put Kaisha to bed the night before and she was gone in the morning with the front door ajar. Police immediately began talking to possible witnesses. They spoke to Kaisha's biological father, Chris Whippert. He said that he'd been at home with his mother all night, then went out that morning to get a tattoo. Feels like a good alibi.
What did he get?
It didn't go into detail.
Fuck.
But like I feel like
I
look at
think
how
it would
dressed
be an
this
easily
is.
provable. Yeah.
Yeah. Also receipts and shit.
Yeah.
Hundreds of volunteers and police began searching, including Robert Smith, who was Christie's partner. Some sources said boyfriend, some said husband. So I'm just going to call him partner. There was some hope that maybe Kaisha had just wandered off in the middle of the night or early morning. I saw it reported that she really liked the stray cats in the neighborhood. So some family theorized that she'd gone out to see the cats. Feels like a weird thing to do in the middle of the night,
Not when
but
you're a normal lover.
Was
I'm
like,
not a
I could see a
six-year-old.
kid not really thinking it through and being like, oh, I want to see the cats.
A kid or me.
A kid or Bailey.
Within 24 hours of the report being made, police uncovered that Kaisha had not been seen at school or by anyone since early July. So by August 2nd, they found that nobody had seen her since the beginning of July. The lead investigator, Detective Inspector Russell Oxford, found that the last time she had been seen by any immediate family member was July 7th. On August 3rd, Christy and Robert made public pleas for help, begging anyone to contact authorities if they've seen their beautiful daughter. Kaisha Louise Wippert was born April 22nd, 2004. She had big blue eyes and curly brown hair. She was always happy and bubbly and loved playing. Following the news reports, candlelight vigils formed outside the Abraham home in Mount Druitt.
Is this giving Casey Anthony vibes to anyone else?
Anytime a kid's missing and then they're like, oh, it's actually been several weeks. I'm like, oh, we've been down this road before.
That's her mom and Robert.
She has purple in her hair.
I think it's red.
Is it? I don't know.
Oh, I see pink.
Oh, that's
They're very.
pose.
I think that's like from
Very
her
nice.
Facebook.
I love how his hand is just so
On her
perfect.
shoulder.
Yeah, love it.
I like the way that he's peeking out over her shoulder, like she's protecting him, and he's like, I told you not to mess with me.
He's like, look down the hall. I thought I saw someone.
These are the visuals.
It's a creepy
On,
doll.
huh?
The center of the one on the left, it's a very creepy doll.
I thought you said that's a creepy girl, and I was like, that's a little rude. She's
Oh, I
missing
should
Bailey.
mention, I forgot to mention, we're in Australia.
Okay.
Key piece.
Yeah. Well, I mean, not, it's not like vital to the information, but yeah.
We're dealing with an entire different, like, ecosystem of animals.
Dingo.
Okay.
What if a crocodile came out of nowhere? Or what if a dingo came and got her?
Was going to say it was a dingo. On August 30th, police interviewed Chris Wippert, and Chris, they interviewed him in a more official sentence, more elaborate way, rather than just being like, hey, where were you? They were like, let's have a sit down chat. And he told them that although he'd been paying child support regularly, he hadn't seen Kaisha in years. It was about this time when people started noticing interesting behavior from Christy and Robert. After the initial search on the first day, neither Robert nor Christy ever went out searching for Kaisha. In fact, it seemed life for the two had returned to normal. Christy would go and get her hair and nails done and go shopping. And then during interviews with like the media, she'd like say something and then stop and ask to start over, like take it from the top or try it again.
She needs a take two.
Yeah,
Yeah.
you need to make sure your performance is perfect.
Her best friend and neighbor, Allison Anderson, told the media, like, so Allison had Christie's back the whole time. She was just like, something happened to Kaisha, and I know Christie and I know Robert, and they would never do anything. And she told the media to leave the family alone and stop making baseless claims against them. So, like, she had their back. But then Christie got into it with an owner of a flea market. She accused them of cashing in on Kaisha's name. The owner had renamed his flea market. I can't talk tonight.
That's okay, you're doing great.
He renamed the flea market in honor of Kaisha by calling it the Kaisha Flea Market.
Oh, okay.
Christie and Robert believed it was in poor taste to use Kaisha's name without permission. The owner responded saying he has no time for their complaint and told them to, quote, get off your ass and go look for your kid. Because we're trying our best to try and find closure, and our community won't heal unless we find some results on Kaisha. Bailey has thoughts. Lacey has thoughts.
I feel like there's some fault on both sides. Mostly with him, though.
Well, how so?
Well, you don't know where Kreisha is, and that you're naming your business after her, thinking like she's gone or dead or whatever. Then you're yelling at a victim's family whether or not they're doing anything to find her. Maybe they can't. Maybe they're truly grief stricken. I don't think that's the case because she's doing all these other errands and stuff. But maybe they're like truly grief stricken that they're just living. Like they're not doing anything.
Can I defend him for a second?
Sure.
So this was months. We're now into like September at this point. And I think that the community was getting really not fed up, but they were like, we're trying so hard to find your daughter, and you're getting your hair done. And you're getting nanny petties, and you're going on TV and making weird interviews and getting into fights with people. Like, can you help? Because, like, there is a 6-year-old who's missing, and like, what are you doing about it? You're supposed to care more than we do. And yet, that's how I felt his
No,
deal
and
with it.
I for sure get that side too, but like, I mean, say that they weren't doing like all this stuff, it just
It felt like
feels
a weird
weird
move.
to name your business after her.
Yeah.
I mean, like, if it's
I
like,
mean, you keep saying business. It was like a pop-up flea market type thing.
still
I mean,
feels
like,
weird.
okay.
It feels like Bailey said, it almost feels like a memorial thing. Like she already died, and
Yeah.
they're like, in
Well, I
memory
think,
of Aisha.
can I tell you, I think that the vibe that they were getting was it was very much like Casey Anthony, where everybody kind of knew what was going on. But there was no like,
Like evidence or anything yet?
yeah. Like, you know how everybody was like, we know what happened. And so he was kind of just, I think it was less of a memorial and more of like a keep her name out there type thing. Like, don't let anybody forget about Kaisha because her parents seem to want to. I don't know if you could tell. I liked what he said. I thought it was. I don't have
Yeah,
any time for your complaints. Get off your ass and look for your kid.
I
I
like
did enjoy
that
the
part.
jab.
It's just the how he chose to keep her name alive. It just if it's a weird move
Okay.
from a
Shall we
stranger.
continue? Okay. During the investigation, Christy and Robert moved out to a motel since their home was a crime scene. When they returned to their unit, Allison was helping them. You remember Allison? She was helping them return. And she witnessed something she found strange. When Christy walked into the apartment, she came across one of Kaisha's sweaters, or what they called it, a jumper, lying on the floor. She kicked it out of the way and complained that she had been told by the police that none of Kaisha's belongings would be there when they got back.
Yeah, so she was like annoyed that her missing daughter's shirt
sweater.
Was on the floor.
Yeah.
You had said
and then more than just annoyed, she kicked it out of the way.
Yeah.
I think that if I was in her position and I truly didn't know where my daughter was, I would scoop that up and smell it.
Yeah.
And then start to cry.
Yeah.
Allison's her best friend, you said?
Yeah.
She defended her too. Allison was
and she only thought that supportive. That was strange.
She was just like, interesting. She probably was thinking, like, she didn't say anything until afterwards, mm-hmm. after we find out what happened. But she was just like, that wasn't a thing that stood out to me. I think it was like she had all of her eggs in Christie's basket. And then little things kept popping up. And she was like, I'm just going to take an egg back. You know, it was a little weird. Back up a little bit. Don't be mad at Allison. You'll see why later. During the search, the forensics team made an alarming discovery. Traces of Kaisha's blood was found in every single room of the house.
Oh.
She cut her finger.
And ran through the house.
Yeah.
Okay. That is startling.
Yeah. The police questioned Christie about this, and Christie immediately became defensive. Like, it's one thing to just say she was immediately defensive, but I heard the interview tape and she was just like, what, why are you asking me that? Like, what do you care? Like, what do you want? She, like, aggressively defensive.
Why are you even looking for blood?
Yeah, it's been months. Can we stop looking for my kid now? Can, like, that's the vibe that she gave off. So, as you can imagine, police became suspicious of Christie and her partner, Robert. So, they formed a plan. A 9-month sting operation.
Mm.
How fun, right?
Like a good sting operation.
Mm-hmm. Oh my
gosh. An undercover officer got close to Christie and asked her in, like, April 2011, so months later, he got close to her and was like, hey, tell me the truth about Kaisha. The officer even offered to help move the body if that needed to be done. Christie finally confessed.
What a dumb bitch.
She told, so this is going to suck, just so you guys know. She told the undercover officer that she nudged Kaisha with her foot because she'd been crying and refusing to put on her pajamas. The nudge scared her, and she jumped, then hit her head. This is what Christie says.
She jumped from what?
A nudge.
The nudge
scared her.
The nudge frightened Kaisha so much that she jumped and then hit her head.
Okay.
Christie claimed that she thought Kaisha was fine at first because she did respond to her. Like, she said that she had her squeeze her fingers. And Kaisha did. But then she lost consciousness.
Because squeezing your fingers is like a concussion test.
She carried Kaisha to the shower to try and wake her up with cold water. She described Kaisha's body as being like jelly. So, all good signs. Christie said that Kaisha started making weird noises, and she thought, that'll go away. So she put her to bed. When Christie checked on her the next morning, Kaisha wasn't breathing. In reality, because that was fantasy, in reality, Christie beat her daughter to death sometime between July 20th and July 27th, 2010. Those dates aren't for sure, but that's what the police believe. And then she allowed the little girl to die by failing to call an ambulance or provide any medical care. After her death, Christie and Robert Smith put Kaisha's body in a suitcase and kept it in there for several days. Then they took a taxi to Shelby near Sydney. So this little red mark is Mount Druitt It's actually outlined there. And then the little square is shall thee. So they carried, they took a taxi to Shelby near Sydney. They carried the little girl's body, which was still in the suitcase, into the bush, where they set her on fire, then buried her in a shallow grave. They destroyed their SIM cards from their phones, disposed of their shoes and clothing, and then they went to the store and bought toys to make it appear that Kaisha was still alive. They waited for nearly 2 weeks before calling 000, which is 911 over in Australia. I listened to the 000 call. She, good actress. She truly sounded devastated and panicked. She also mentions that she has a 2-year-old and a 3-week-old, which, like, I did, like, most of my research, and then I listened to the recording, and I was like, oh, I had no idea that Kaisha was not an only child. So, no mention of those kids prior. So the fact that she had two other kids was brought up because the dispatcher asked who else was in the house. And Christy said that her other children were and her partner, Robert Smith, was. But she actually said that Smith was out in the streets calling out for Kaisha. The dramatics that they went through to try and get through this lie was Oscar worthy. Christy told the undercover officer. So she told all of that to the undercover officer before she and Robert took him to the gravesite. Her Kaisha's skeletal remains were uncovered on April 22nd, 2011. I don't know if you remember, but her birthday is April 22nd. So she was found on her birthday, on her 7th birthday. And Robert Smith and Christy Abrahams were arrested at 1:12 a.m. An autopsy of Kaisha's bones could not establish an exact cause of death. Kaisha's funeral was in September 2011, which, like, I know that it was probably because they were investigating, but that's sad. She was found in April. I have a picture. This is where they found her body. There. Chris Wibbert, he said that, quote, I want Kaisha to leave this earth knowing how much she was loved, and I want her to be put to rest the way she deserves. Then they requested that mourners wear her favorite color, purple, which is why her coffin is purple. Christy and Robert both requested to attend the funeral.
Fuck you.
Yeah, and that's basically what her biological dad said. He said hell would freeze over before he let that happen. In May 2013, Robert Smith pled guilty to manslaughter and accessory to murder and was sentenced to 12 to 16 years in prison. Christy Abrahams pleaded guilty to murder in June 2013. It wasn't until Christy's sentencing that the full tragic details of Kaisha's life emerged. Kaisha's remains exhibited fractured teeth. Her jawbone was fractured in two places, as well as 10 separate bone injuries, indicating repeated blows over the course of months that an expert pathologist said would have left her in considerable pain. These types of injuries are mainly found in children who have suffered severe or prolonged physical abuse, said Dr. Matthew Ord. Kaisha's resemblance to her father, Chris, reportedly annoyed Christy Abrahams and triggered her physical and verbal abuse. So, because she looked like her dad, is what.
Why don't you go send her to live with her dad then?
All right, if you don't want to look at her, like, give her to somebody who will.
It then emerged that community services workers, which is what they call like social services, community services, teachers, police, and relatives of Kaisha Wippert all knew or suspected she was suffering serious abuse in the months before her death. Kaisha had only ever gone to school 4 times in her life.
Oh my god.
She is 6, I will say that.
Okay, but...
but still, it was like a whole year.
Yeah.
And when she did go, teachers noticed bruises on her head and face. Between January and July 2010, truant officers made 7 visits to the home, but no one ever answered the door. Justice Ian Harrison was the judge deciding the sentence for Christy. And he said Kaisha's murder was the result of the abuse Christy herself suffered as a child, as well as a failure of the system to provide proper care.
And also maybe as a result of Christy abusing her child.
Yeah, that's how many people felt. The court, but this is what swayed his judgment. The court heard Abrahams was the child of a violent and alcoholic man who had spent large periods of his life in custody. Her mother had epilepsy, and when Christy was 10, she heard her mother having a seizure. She was alone in the house with her 3-year-old brother, so she was the only one available to help her mother. But when she tried, she discovered her mother had died. Her father didn't want custody of the children, so this began years in and out of foster care. As a teenager, a psychologist assessed her and diagnosed her with an intellectual disability. Christy met and began dating Chris when she was 19 years old. Christy quickly became pregnant, but one night, after an argument with Chris, he caught her punching herself in the stomach.
Feels like a red flag.
Yeah.
A really big red flag.
A really bright red flag.
Yeah.
I assume he made her stop because the pregnancy continued on. And Christy gave birth to their son, Aiden, on February 6, 2003. After another fight between Chris and Christy, police were called. Chris told the police that Christy was mixing her medication and becoming violent. She threw a lit candle at him while holding Aiden and got hot wax everywhere, nearly burning the baby. Chris told the police that Christy had been threatening to throw Aiden off the balcony if he didn't stop crying and let her sleep. A report was made, and the responding officer contacted community services workers with the hope that Aiden would be removed from the home. But this didn't happen. On March 22, 2003, Aiden was rushed to the hospital, but it was of little use. Aiden was cold and blue. He was pronounced dead upon arrival. The autopsy found no signs of abuse, and his cause of death could not be determined. So he was...
was he suffering? Like
almost 2 months old. Mm. No, they couldn't determine. Hmm. But he was blue, so. So, as we know, Kaisha was born April 22nd, 2004. When Kaisha was 15 months old, Christy and Chris began arguing again, and Christy kicked Chris out. While he was packing his things, Chris said Kaisha began crawling towards them. He said he watched Christy storm towards the baby, pick her up by the neck, and dump her onto the couch. When Kaisha started to crawl off again, Christy picked her up and bit her. Chris called the police. Christy pleaded guilty to assault in court and was forced to complete an anger management course. Chris was originally given full custody of Kaisha, but for some reason the government placed her in foster care shortly afterwards. Kaisha was returned to Christy's custody in December 2006. A year later, Christy was pregnant again. During an appointment, a nurse reported a bruise she'd seen on Kaisha's face. A caseworker visited Kaisha the following day and also noticed a cigarette burn. Kaisha could not explain the bruise on her face, but when asked about the burn, she told the caseworker, "Mom hit there. Mom did that." Despite this, no further action was taken. In June 2010, when Christy was pregnant for the 4th time, she called her father. She asked him, just real quick, remember her father was the alcoholic that abused her?
Mm-hmm. And also didn't, her the way she is.
Yeah, and didn't want the custody of the kids after the mom died.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So June 2010, Christy was pregnant for the fourth time. She called her dad. She asked him to take custody of Kaisha. She told him, quote, "I'm sick of her. I will hurt her. I really will hurt her. I will kill her." She said, "I can't fucking handle this kid anymore."
I feel like when someone's repeatedly abusing children, they should be like castrated.
Yeah.
Also, was
Or wear
Chris
a
was the
fucking
father?
condom.
Chris was the father of Aiden and Kaisha. Is he the father of her next two kids as well?
No, after she regained custody of Kaisha after she bit her and sent her to the hospital, she met Robert Smith.
Okay. I was going to, I'm sorry for Chris and what he's been through. I was going to criticize him if he was the parent of the next two kids after Kaisha was taken away from her mom temporarily for stuff. But I won't because he didn't do that then. Robert did.
Yes.
Why? I mean, if we're gonna focus on Chris, he was paying child support. Why, first of all, was he paying that? Second of all, I don't know if how much he fought the court for custody of his daughter, but like,
Yeah.
there's
I
evidence that
don't
she fucking did that. How are we not talking
Right.
about that in court for during child support?
I
Right.
don't know. I think that what the judge thought, the one that was sentencing Christy, where he was like, it's not all of her fault. I think that he does have a point that the system kind of failed Kaisha, but that doesn't take away the fact that Christy killed her.
No.
Right.
Or had been
And that there
abusive of
was
her
evidence she
or
was
her other
abusive.
kids.
Right.
Yeah.
Like,
I did really want to quick. The reason allegedly that she was sick of Kaisha, in addition to the fact that she looked like her dad, she was just having a hard time potty training.
and just keep her in diapers.
Oh, well, she was sick, so.
I
But like that she's a kid. You
yeah.
gotta train them.
Right. And she's a kid living in a house that's not like a stable and safe environment. So it's gonna take
Yeah.
longer anyway. Not that Christy would be able to figure that out. But it makes sense to me hearing what she was
Lindsay
going
is
through that she
so
wasn't.
agitated.
I'm irritated. I'm
Yeah.
really irritated.
Or, you
She
know,
was,
after you've killed
Kaisha
your
was failed
first
in so many
child,
ways.
stop having children.
Also, real quick, so Chris, his mom's name is Liz, and she didn't know. So the last time she didn't know that Kaisha was living with Christy again after she was taken from her after the biting incident until police came and said, "Have you seen Kaisha?" So for 4 years, she didn't know that Kaisha was living with Christy. So there's that might shed some light onto like how much Chris was able to get into contact with them or whatever. Like he said that he hadn't seen her in years. I don't know if Christy is
Of
just
course, though.
keeping her away. What'd you say, Bill?
But he was paying child support.
Yeah, that might have just been like taken out of his paychecks.
Yeah, they could have just been,
Docking his pay.
I
Yeah.
mean,
So,
but you'd think that if like your child was taken away from the mom
yeah.
because she went to anger management, and then you had your child for a little bit, but then you lost her to foster care, that you wouldn't be paying child support because she's not in anyone's
Yeah,
care.
I'm not saying that he didn't know that
Yeah.
she was back with Christy, but Liz said that she thought Chris Kaisha was still in foster care until they showed up and was like, she's not with her mom. And Liz was like, was she ever?
What's she doing with her mom?
Yeah. And I'd like, not for nothing, but like, there are some pretty big red flags there, Chris. Like you can like say that you haven't seen her for years, but also like she grabbed her by the neck when she was a baby.
Yeah. Or Aiden. Like, let's talk about Aiden.
Let's talk about
Right.
it.
Even though they couldn't like confirm whatever the death was, there was concerning behavior from her before Aiden died.
So looking back, Allison remembered that the last she'd seen of Kaisha was on July 11th. She had been sitting in the car while Christy stood outside smoking. Kaisha asked if she could get out of the car. Christy responded, "No, you fucking can't. Shut up and sit in the car." So, like, I feel like there's a ton of red flags.
Yeah.
I feel like if my friend was treating their child like that, where like I saw it consistently, I'd be like, what the fuck is going on?
Yeah, like, what's your problem? Do you not like your kid? Because I'll take him.
Yeah, she's just sitting in a car. She's asking a question. Like, she's not like, really?
She's six. Settle down. Chris's mother, Liz, recalled that something had bothered her when she saw Christy on the news before they knew what happened to Kaisha, when she was, like, pleading with the public to, like, tell me where my baby is. What bothered her was the way that Christy was crying. It was the same way she cried for Aiden. There were no tears. Liz always felt that an inquest should have been done following Aiden's death. Justice Harrison considered all of that, as well as Christy's intellectual disability, when determining a sentence. He also believed that although Christy had intended to cause serious harm to Kaisha, there was insufficient evidence to suggest she had intended to kill her. He ended up sentencing Christy to 16 to 22 years in prison. With time already served, she will be eligible for parole in 2027.
2027?
Yes.
There's a petition. I want to sign it.
In November 2012, Christopher John Whippert was found dead in his home by his mother. He'd been suffering from diabetes for years. He was only 29.
Oh.
And last year, Robert was released on parole.
I mean, how much of,
like, I think that the theory,
was he abusing her too? Do we know that?
So there was a report that I only saw one source for, so I didn't mention it, but there was a report that somebody saw him smack her in a parking lot. I think that it was very much led by Christy, and he took some liberties every now and then because he was the stepfather.
Yeah.
But I think mostly he was punished for the aftermath.
Like the conspiracy and everything, yeah.
But putting her in a suitcase and setting her body on fire and then burning it. So Elizabeth Johnson Reserve Park became a memorial to Kaisha's memory when her relatives, Blacktown Council, and the Brennan family collaborated to have a butterfly rocker and plaque installed in April 2013. So you can see her little butterfly rocker. She loved purple and she loved butterflies.
Aww.
In April 2017, local residents as well as family members gathered in the park to remember Kaisha on what would have been her 13th birthday. They wore purple, enjoyed purple cupcakes, and had a moment of silence for Kaisha while surrounded by purple balloons. Kaisha was buried near her brother Aiden, and her headstone reads, "You are not just a memory or part of our past. You are part of our family as long as it lasts."
That's cute too.
So why did I want to share this story for spooky season? Well, let's back up a little bit. Let's go back to August 2010. Kaisha was just reported missing. Nobody knows where she is yet. Nobody is that suspicious of the parents. So 2 weeks after Kaisha was reported missing, police received a tip from Cheryl Carol Langerway. Cheryl was an Aboriginal woman who called the police about a dream she'd had. In said dream, Kaisha had appeared to her, and Cheryl awoke with a gut feeling that Kaisha's body would be found in a nature preserve near Sydney. 2 days later, on August 18th, Cheryl and a friend traveled to Nurragingi Reserve, just west of Sydney. So this is where her home is. This is where Kaisha's home is. This is the reserve. While walking around, they discovered something very interesting. Would you like to know what they found?
No.
Yes.
Oh, well, then that's it for me.
Thank you.
Did you want to know what they found?
Maybe.
Yeah. They discovered a headless, limbless body wrapped in plastic wrap, or wrapped in plastic along a creek. But this body was definitely not that of Kaisha Whippets. The body was later identified as belonging to Christy McDougall, a 31-year-old mother from Sydney who had been missing since June. So let me tell you about Christy McDougall, briefly. Tell us. On Saturday, June 19th, 2010, Christy McDougall of Carlingford dropped her 2-year-old son off with family to go visit friends at Homebush in Sydney's West. That's Christy. She told friends she was going to the Bankston area, but she was reported missing 2 days later. A week later, police became gravely concerned that she hadn't returned. Her father began to fear the worst, since she was absolutely devoted to her son and hadn't contacted them since dropping him off. That following Tuesday, her dark green station wagon was found parked illegally in Ermington. So this is where she lives. This is Ermington. This is Homebush. And this is Bankston. So she dropped off her son. She went to Homebush. She said she was going here. And then her car was found here. And then her torso was found here. Okay. After discovery of her corpse, police alleged that she'd been selling the drug ice. They believe that a 47-year-old man named Robert Best killed Christy because she told Best's baby mama that he was using drugs. Deborah Hogden, 42, watched Best as he strangled Christy. Best allegedly told Hogden that he'd take care of the body. Both Robert Best and Deborah Hogden were arrested. Best was charged with murder and Hogden was charged with accessory. 2 years later, the jury reached a verdict on Robert Thomas Best's guilt. Best pled not guilty to the charges and the trial lasted 5 weeks. The Crown prosecution relied heavily on testimony from Hogden. According to Hogden, Best attacked Christy when she came to his apartment to deliver drugs. She alleged that Best began to choke Christy with a rope, then stuck her head in a bucket of water. The Crown claimed Best later dismembered the body with a hacksaw before dumping the pieces in various locations around Sydney. The defense dismissed Hogden's version of events as fanciful and illogical. The jury was informed that Hogden had pled guilty to accessory after the fact, had pled guilty to accessory after the fact charges, and had been placed on a good behavior bond. The defense claimed that Hogden received a reduced sentence for her testimony. He then told the jury that basically Christie's job was dangerous and had many occupational hazards. He urged the jury to consider alternative ways she could have died. After 4 days of deliberations, the jury found Robert Best not guilty of murder or manslaughter. Christie's head and limbs were never found, and no one has been found guilty of committing her murder. So hear me out. In psychic Cheryl's defense, in both murders, a woman named Christy and a man named Robert were involved.
Mm. They just got crossed a little bit.
Yeah. What do you think? Do you think she's like the real, or do you think?
I think it's hard to go off of like one instance.
Yeah.
I think it's,
I do tend to be suspicious of people when it is a one instance thing. When I'm like, this is really random, but I did just figure out this murder. I'm always a little bit like, I don't know.
My thing is that I saw some people were like, well, what if maybe she stumbled upon the body and then thought, like, maybe I can like get some cred. But like, I feel like, I mean, I'm not an expert, but I feel like a 31-year-old's torso might look a little different than a 6-year-old's torso.
Would say for sure.
Yeah, so like I feel like it'd be weird if she was like, it must be Kaisha's body.
Yeah.
I don't know. Plus she's Aboriginal, so I was like, ooh.
Little
Mystic.
something
That's
there.
what they do.
I don't know, like they're very in tune with nature, aren't they?
I know.
So I think Kaisha came back and was like, listen. Like she was like, hey, I know that you want to find me, but Christy McDougal has been missing since June. So.
And my mother is for sure gonna get got, so
Or maybe she was
they're
like,
gonna figure my thing out, so
maybe she was like, go find Christy McDougal, and then like keep the name Christy in your head. It's spelled the exact same way too.
Sorry.
Oh, it's time for me to wake up. That's my wake up alarm.
This late at night?
Well, no, but you know, you hear it and you're just like,
Oh. All
Irritated.
right. Should we go into
Well,
mine?
yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
Speaking
So
of Australia.
I like Drew's. We're gonna be in Australia.
Down under.
Also, like Drew, it's gonna involve some kids.
Lovely.
I
These
we
kids are
know it.
creepy.
They are. Okay. So August 22nd, 1987, in Lower
August.
County. Yeah.
Mine took place in August too.
Okay.
And they found her body on April 22nd.
Okay.
Just
I
making connections.
don't know if I have any other Aprils in here. Oh, I do. I do have an April. Okay. August 22nd, 1987, in Lower Plenty, Melbourne, Victoria, Australia, which is Victoria is the like lowest province or state in Australia. An unknown man entered a family home around 4 a.m. He removed a pane of glass from the living room window in order to gain entry, carrying a knife and a gun. He
You
forced
paused there, and I was like, why was there
in
a
his
plane
last
of glass?
room.
Why was there just glass in the living room?
Carrying a gun and a knife, he forced the family onto their stomachs. The parents in the home don't go anywhere on the slide just yet. The parents in the home were shoved into a wardrobe with their hands and feet bound. They had two kids in the home, a 6-year-old boy who was tied to his bed using surgical tape, which, depending on the brand, I don't think is that strong, but the person the man wanted was their 11-year-old daughter. Her name and the family's name remained like was never released to the public. That's why I'm speaking cryptically right now. The man spent 2 hours in the room sexually assaulting her, then left with some vinyl records and a blue coat with no other evidence. This was the beginning of the spree of the man called Mr. Cruel. You can go to the next slide now, Drew.
I
He
don't
terrorized.
like that name.
Neither do I.
Oh, I don't
He
like
terrorized.
that
Whoa.
Yeah. He terrorized quiet suburban areas of Melbourne. He gained his name because of the meticulous planning of his attacks and his tendency to trick the parents of the victims by pretending his only motive was to rob them before taking their children. They never got a description from him because he always wore a ski mask. So that first instance was in August of 87. December 27th of 1988, in East Ringwood, another neighborhood like outside of Melbourne, he broke into the Wills family home at approximately 5:45 a.m. He found Mr. Wills first, held a gun on him, and told him not to be a hero. He then bound Mr. and Mrs. Wills with copper wire. He cut the telephone wire and went into the girl's room. The Wills had three daughters, and from what I read, it seems like they all shared a room. Mr. Cruel took Sharon from her bed, the 10-year-old. He gagged her and collected a few items of her clothing and took her to an unknown location. 18 hours later, Sharon was found walking along Orchard Road in a nearby suburb of Bayswater, traumatized but alive. She remembered while she was held repeatedly hearing the sound of low-flying aircraft, leading authorities to believe she was held somewhere in the Tula Marine Airport flight path. So, like, around an airport, almost.
It's a good clue.
Yeah. But nothing was ever, like, more found after this. It's...
Oh, no. You said this was unsolved.
Yeah.
Boo.
The following year, in 1990, right? No, 2 years later. In 1990, July 3rd, in Catterbury, he broke into the Lena's family home around 11:40 p.m. Mr. and Mrs. Lena's was out at a party when Mr. Cruel entered the home. Only 15 and 13-year-old daughters were sleeping. He woke them up, armed with a knife and a gun again. He tied up the 15-year-old and forced Nicola, the 13-year-old, to get into her school uniform and took her from her home in the family car. He stole the car this time. He drove them around for about 10 minutes, about a kilometer away, and then had a second car ready and took her to a house where she was held for 2 days.
I don't like how well he has this planned out.
Yeah. July 5th, Nicola was found alive beside an electrical substation in Kew, which is approximately 5 kilometers from her home. She was fully clothed and wrapped in a blanket, but her eyes were taped shut. Nicola later told authorities she could also hear aircraft from the house where she was held. You can go to the next, like, two slides. It's going to be Nicola and Sharon. That's Sharon. And that's Nicola. And you can go to the next one. The following year, in April 13th, 1991, 13-year-old Carmen Chang was babysitting her two younger sisters in their home in Templestowe, which is a higher-income area. The Chang's home was an 18-room house protected with a 2-meter-high fence with electrical front gates. Their parents were at the family business, which was a Chinese restaurant. Carmen was read to her sisters, who were both 7 and 9, before they watched a documentary about Marilyn Monroe in Carmen's bedroom. Carmen and her older sister, of the younger, went to the kitchen for a snack. On the way, they saw Mr. Cruel in a hallway. The man was wearing a green and gray tracksuit, a dark ski mask, and holding a knife. He grabbed Carmen by her hair and pushed a bed against the door to trap her two sisters into another room. Before leaving the home, Carmen, he spray painted on Mrs. Chang's car, quotes, "payback Asian drug dealer" and "more to come." This was later determined to be like a red herring that just wasted time. A year later, a man was walking his dog at Eggers Creek and found Carmen. She was buried in a shallow grave, and she had been shot in the head 3 times.
I was just thinking, like, at least he leaves them alive.
Wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah. And again, the trail went cold. The investigation formed a task force running for 29 months and cost nearly $4 million. More million dollars. It was made up of 40 investigators and analysts who identified 27,000 suspects and received over 10,000 tips. Excuse me. They checked 30,000 houses and arrested 73 people, but none were identified as Mr. Cruel. Um, it was clear that like he isolated through the years, and that's where like that's how close they all were. Those are the neighborhoods that they were all taken.
What's the red one?
I think that was the first one. It was an interactive map that I screenshotted. I also think, and from what I saw, a lot of theories are that he really took the time to stalk these victims and families with the amount of time that was between them. And then also just, he knew the layout of the house. He knew how to get through like the electrical fence of the Chang's home. Some other important clues that people had theories about were the copper wire specifically. In the 90s and late 80s, it was expensive and difficult to get. So they were like, could he have been an electrician? Could he have been someone in construction? Another thing that they noticed was the attacks occurred around school holidays. I didn't really like double check that because I don't know Australian school holidays. But then like that theorized that like
maybe he's a teacher
or someone that worked in school.
I feel I'm getting like a school bus driver vibe.
Interesting.
Because like that's limited interaction with kids. So he'd like want more. But then he'd also be like, he'd know where they all lived. He'd know how to get there and how like that would be good for his escape. Did they all go to like the same schools?
I mean, they were in different like neighborhoods, grades? So I don't think so. No. So like, so what I'm thinking of is if you think like of like, for instance, Philly and the neighborhoods that are outside of Philly, like we're one neighborhood, but then there's like Cheltenham or like
Penn. Yeah, I so see what you're saying.
I think I'm thinking of it as that way.
I'm curious how he picked his victims then.
I know. But so there was a profile, John Kelly. He did like, he worked with some of the investigation and he came up with a profile of what he thinks was what they're looking for. He also thinks that he's a burglar who escalated to abducting girls. I disagree with that. I don't think he was a burglar that escalated. I think he knew what he wanted and it was always about abducting girls. Like I can't see how a burglar would just randomly want us go to pedophilia.
What I'm curious about is why he stopped. He seemed to be getting away with it.
They have an idea.
Oh, are you gonna tell us?
Yeah.
Oh,
I'm getting there. So part of their profile, they believed he was to have a higher intelligence. He was also extremely neat and clean. Apparently he bathed two of his victims and they couldn't find like any fingerprints or any like physical evidence in the homes. They didn't think he had a substance abuse problem for the need of being like so clear-minded and like how organized and in control he was for all the scenes. Like they weren't chaotic. They predicted that like he would have like photographed or videotaped the victims. They think that he's a functional individual, one with a steady employment, and is generally regarded as a good neighbor, polite, quiet, and somewhat introverted. Now, they think, and this is, I mean, because we don't know who this guy is, they think that after Carmen, killing her destroyed his fantasy of like how he would treat these victims as like his girlfriends, and that may have caused him to stop or kill himself or die.
Oh, I hope it's that one.
Yeah. Then another idea was like maybe he moved overseas to a country where like there was more lax of laws for like child exploitation. Another theory is possibly someone with police or criminal justice experience because of his obsession with cleaning the crime scene.
Something that stuck out to me is the surgical tape that he used for the first
Yeah.
victim. I feel like that's not something people just have laying around.
I mean, and I couldn't confirm this. Is surgical tape like the tape that I use for catheters, like the white tape?
I guess. I don't know. What do you use?
It's like the Johnson & Johnson brand. It's just like the white medical tape that we use for
Yeah.
keeping catheters. Is that the same as surgical tape, you think?
I'm pretty sure.
Well, I mean, you can get that pretty easily.
Yeah, but like when you're going shopping for tape, are you gonna get surgical tape or are you gonna get like duct tape?
Would probably go with duct tape because I feel like it's stronger.
Yeah, so I'm thinking like maybe he's a school nurse.
Maybe. I also saw a theory that they think Carmen was his first murder ever, which, I mean, there's very clearly an escalation in what he like was doing. But they were thinking that even though she was like shot execution style, three times seems like a lot.
Do they have a theory as to why she was the only one he murdered?
That she saw him. Like she saw his face.
Oh,
Yeah.
she was cute. Look at her little pigtails.
I saw one thing that was like it's like a Reddit thread that were like, what if he killed JonBenet Ramsey? And I was like, okay.
Sorry, what if he did what?
Killed JonBenet Ramsey. Which when was she murdered?
96, I want to say.
Which it seems like that's an interesting take.
Yeah.
That's kind of like.
She's also mu she was also much younger than these girls because he was taking like,
Preteens.
yeah. And also,
And she was six.
why would he all of a sudden backtrack to not taking her from the house?
Yeah, that's what I was gonna say. I'm like, that's why I was like, because
Yeah.
one, the victim is younger. Two, he didn't take her out of the house. He didn't keep her for several days. And
Yeah.
I don't think they found JonBenet sexually assaulted at all. Was she?
I don't
I'm trying to
remember. I
remember
thought.
now.
I feel like that was one of the things that people were like, yes, she was, but then they were like, no, she wasn't.
Yeah, I think that there was maybe something that was a little bit weird.
If she was, I feel like it was with like an inanimate object. You know? I'm not sure. Where's the fact checker? Side note, can you hear the dog snoring?
I cannot.
Of course, they're being quiet now. But that is all I have for Mr. Cruel from Australia.
It seems that she was sexually assaulted, but not like raped. Like something was, an object was used.
Okay. That's what I thought.
But like, yeah, I don't know if Mr.
Doesn't feel the
Cruel,
same.
No.
no.
I feel like maybe people like latch on that because they can't imagine that more than like
Also, well,
two
no, yeah, I
people
was
would
gonna
do
say,
that.
also, doesn't he wait until the parents are out? But no, he doesn't, not always. But he doesn't like sneak around. Like with the first one, he was like, hey, hi, I'm here. Go in the cupboard. I'm gonna
Well,
take your
yeah, and then
kid.
the second one, he did the same thing and he pointed a gun right at the dad.
Yeah.
Which, like, I can't help
Also,
thinking.
he didn't write any ransom notes.
No.
Yeah. Anyway.
Doesn't feel the same at
Yeah, it's
all.
not the same, but.
Unless he like hit his head and decided to change everything.
He decided to change preferences and write a really long, confusing ransom note. But that's all I have for Mr. Kroll. And all I can say is thank God he stopped for whatever reason.
I really hope he killed himself.
I mean, it sounds like it was horrifying.
Yeah, like I could see how that would upset him. I don't know. If his intention was never to kill them, but then he felt like he needed to, I could see how that would like mess with him. But I don't know if it would make him stop.
Yeah, it seems...
It seems like he has some urges.
It also seemed like... It's weird that he just fell off, because I think that this is the most, like, perfect case of, like, escalation.
Yeah.
You too. But also to, like... Because his first case, he spent 2 hours in the home with his victim, with the parents and the brother. Like, that's some balls.
Mm-hmm. I think that he's definitely, that wasn't his first time doing something. He was way too comfortable with that. I don't know if it was burglary. I think that he doesn't seem to be worried about breaking into other people's homes with people in them. So I could see where someone was a burglary. But I think it was something violent too.
Yeah. The part that scared me the most was like, for Carmen's case, literally just like, you're home. You're like in a giant house.
With a big fence.
With a huge fence and an electrical gate. Thinking you're safe. Literally walking to your kitchen, and then you just, like, happen to look down a hallway, and a man is there.
Terrified.
Yeah. I was like, that's a horror movie.
No, thank you.
Well, that was sinister.
And we were mostly sarcastic.
And we hope you keep listening.